Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, if you like football, you'll like this one. He's back by popular demand, Chris Landry of LandryFootball.com, NFL scout, NFL analyst, does a lot of work for NBC Sports Radio. Chris is terrific, knows the college and pro game inside and out, and we talk about a little bit of the Ole Miss situation. You probably heard that earlier today on the Oxford Exxon podcast, and then we delved into a lot of NFL topics as the NFL season approaches. But first, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal Highway 6 West in Oxford. Right now, the mix 5 for 5 featuring the spicy chick is there, fries, dog, ice cream, spicy chick, a soda, all of that's right there. Also, hand spun shakes. You can shake up your combo for $1. Add a shake to your combo. $1. It's hot outside. The shake can cool you off. Also, breakfast all day. The chick sunriser combo available in original or spicy. So a lot of that at the Oxford Crystal. Go check that out right next door to the Oxford Exxon. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios, Clark Ford in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He will send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. There's no haggling. It's just right to the bottom line. Great deals at Clark Ford. Once you get your quote, you can shop it around, or you can let Clark Ford do for you what it's done for customers all over the South. Listeners to this podcast from Missouri to Biloxi, from Shreveport to Atlanta, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. And at the end of your deal, tell Corey, hey, I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention this podcast, obviously, or you can mention the Oxford Exxon podcast. $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory. The podcast is also brought to you by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's also the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. Ask Jason about Community Mortgage's float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. The podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. Currently, Ben Brown and his team are looking to hire part-time and full-time sales team members across Texas and the Southeast to join their team. They offer extensive training, support, and the best products and pricing in the industry. Whether you're looking to supplement your current income or find a better career opportunity, email Ben at benbrown@journeybizsolutions.com. They're looking for motivated individuals with some sales experience, a business degree, or people who are close to completing their business degree who have a passion to serve small business owners. They have an exceptional uncapped commission structure and are an equal opportunity employer. Email Ben today. The podcast is also brought to you by Strategic Partners in Media. SPM is a full-service advertising and public relations firm doing business throughout the country. SPM works with companies of all sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to local startups. Their logic is simple. They find a way to tell a story about their client that captivates an audience that will eventually do business with the client. SPM focuses first and foremost on developing a winning and unique strategy for their clients, whether that is through creating and implementing an aggressive digital and social media plan, producing a captivating television advertisement, or crafting a corporate communications plan to get any business through good or bad times. SPM mastered their craft in the rough and tough political advertising world. They bring to the table decades of advertising experience, plus a unique perspective to advertising and a tireless work ethic rooted in their days of nonstop campaigns. To reach them, email Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. The podcast also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions from 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. This time of year, it's snapper and cobia that are the popular trips to take. The snapper season in Mississippi waters runs through Labor Day. Another popular trip for visitors who don't have as much time is the inshore trips for speckled trout and triple tail. You can reach John through his website, tunachasacharters.com, his Facebook page, or you can email John. I'm sorry, you can call John 228-348-7817. Podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer, but they work on any make or model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast, you get $20 off. Contact Eric, 662-934-3846, or Shane, 662-832-8749. And the podcast is brought to you by LB's Meat Market. LB's Meat Market is on University Avenue in Oxford. It's kind of right across from Kroger. The freshest cuts of meat you can get anywhere in Oxford, right there at LB's. We tell you about it all the time. They have a lunch and catering menu as well. You can go in, get lunch, have lunch catered for your business. We tell you about the fresh cuts all the time. They've got the choice grade Hereford beef, the grass-fed free-range beef from Joyce Farms, free-range Joyce Farm chicken breast, also the locally raised pork from Home Place Pastures. Can't recommend the sausages enough, whether it's for a meal or appetizers. They've got fresh sausage, smoked sausage. My favorite's the chicken jalapeno. I love the chicken spinach feta. If you like pork, the spicy Italian, the pork and green onions, fantastic. The harvest apple, the Swayze sausage, all sorts of smoked sausages. If you're just not in the mood to throw anything on the grill, maybe it's too hot, they have lots of great summer sausages as well. And when you go in, tell Greg Jones that you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden podcast, and grab six beers out of the beer fridge right there to your left. The six beers are $6. You can't beat that anywhere. It's LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. Now let's go to Chris Landry of LandryFootball.com. All right, Chris, thanks so much for being with me. I really appreciate you taking some time here on this Wednesday night. Let me start with this. We're going to get to some NFL stuff in just a minute. I know you know the college game as well as anyone I know. What was your reaction to what happened at Ole Miss with Hugh Freeze? And kind of how do you – just your gut feeling, initial response to how do you think it impacts this particular team going into 2017?
Well, it's heartbreaking to see that happen. I've known you fairly well from a professional standpoint, football standpoint. To see it come down that way was very disheartening, very, very unfortunate for Ole Miss, the conference, and college football. Very disappointed, certainly. I would not have thought that the salacious nature of what happened was coming down the pike. I did think, as it always seemingly does, head coaches' heads usually roll at some point due to NCAA situations. And I think I've always felt anybody was very naive if they thought things were happening there that he knew nothing about. That's very, very unusual. So I was not shocked. I the timing of it, I think it was coming, but the timing of it and the salacious nature was a little bit surprising and certainly very, very disheartening.
Let's just assume for the sake of assumptions that there is no second-year bowl ban. That's an SEC West job. Hugh Freeze made $4.8 million-ish a year. You know lots of coaches. You know agents. you have a kind of a feel for where jobs slot and who might kind of fit into those slots. Without asking you to be specific, unless you just want to be, how attractive would that job be end of November, assuming that Ole Miss decides to make a change and the NCAA penalty is not just catastrophic?
Well, I think in a general sense, the Ole Miss job, an SEC West job, while very difficult considering the other contestants in the West, it's still a very good job. You've mentioned what they're willing to pay or have been willing to pay. It's a very good job. Now, what makes it a real challenge, in my view, is who's going to be making that call and how comfortable do any candidates feel about the people that are running the university, because there's going to be a major image problem that you can quickly get out from under. But, you know, I think that obviously the leverage is going to be with the candidates. And so they're going to want some extra security in terms of years and buyouts that are going to be in the coach's favor, and it should be. And there's going to be, should be, and will be, I think, with certain candidates that would be attractive, would want to have maybe a sense of kind of cleaning house and doing things a different way. And so, you know, I think that if you consider all that, it's still a very good job. But you hit on the key thing. This is on the positive end. If, you know, it doesn't turn out really that bad from an NCAA hit standpoint, my feeling is that it's going to be significant enough to where there's going to have to be a lot of patience and a lot of understanding, and the coach is going to have that built into his contract, because I think it could have a huge effect. For example, you know, if you have a USC, you have an Alabama, you have a program like that that has sanctions, and we've seen it with USC, it's had an effect on them, but they're still recruiting at a very high level. They just don't have the depth. They're coming back quickly. That's not the case for Ole Miss. Ole Miss is looking up at most programs in the West and in the SEC that gets better talent. We've seen Hugh Freeze do a really good job of getting that type of talent. That has been the exception, not the rule at Ole Miss. So you're dealing with a program that is not typically the place where you get the best talent, and now you're going to throw this on top of it, and that's going to only make the job more difficult to sell the program up against the Auburns, the Alabamas, the LSUs, you know, the Floridas, the Georgias, the Tennessees. You know the rules. So I think that that's where the challenge is going to be forever gets it. I think it needs to be somebody that they can start fresh, kind of build, have patience, and build the program from the bottom up, a good foundation, and it's going to have to be a coach that can coach up, meaning you've got to be able to really get the most out of your talent. So that doesn't mean a Les Miles type of guy that, you know, coaches to the level that he has. It needs to be somebody that can coach up. Now, what made Hugh so effective was that he had some ability offensively to coach up. He's been able to beat an Alabama a couple of 2 years in a row where, you know, quite frankly, Alabama still had more overall talent. But he was able to scheme and find ways to be successful with less. And then he was able to, on top of that, recruit very well. And that's why they had such good success and why, obviously, this is such a dark time for the Reps.
Are there any names that come to mind when you that fit that description?
Yeah. You know, to me, if it were me, and I think that they would, if I were doing it, and I've talked to a couple of Ole Miss people, nobody that I don't know who's going to make this call in the end. I don't know who's still going to be there. That's the other part of this. And, you know, you're very, very clued into this. But, you know, I have a hard time believing that the people in the upper administration of the university are going to be the ones making this call. And so I don't know. A lot of this has to play out. But let's just play this game that, all right, you're going to go and you're going to start fresh. If it were me, I would look hard at a lot of people. But a guy that really jumps out me as a really good fit would be Frank Wilson at Texas San Antonio. He's obviously got a lot of SEC background, a great recruiter. And when I say great, you know, that is overused, it's overstated, it's exaggerated. It is not a big enough compliment for what this guy does. I said it for, you know, when you're at LSU, when you're at Tennessee, the places that he's been, recruiting there is one thing, you know, but to go to Texas and San Antonio and to recruit and get in on kids and close on some kids that the big boys are getting, that's impressive. And what he's done over there to turn that around is been extremely impressive. Not only a good recruiter, but a really good organizer, top-notch guy from New Orleans. So has a lot of background in some key fertile recruiting areas.
Has coached at Ole Miss before.
So knows the program. I mean, all those things are really, really important, and I think would be a real positive for Ole Miss. And I don't I hope people take this the right way. I think as somebody for the face of the program, too, I think he'd be a good fit. There are others that would be good, but to me, good young guy that you can grow with would make a whole lot of sense. Somebody's going to jump on him, and in a couple of years, if you're talking about stock going up, his stock's going to be high, a lot higher in a couple of years than he is now. So to me, it would make a whole lot of sense.
Another name that pops up some, and then we're going to move to the NFL, I promise. Neil Brown at Troy, his name comes up, a former Kentucky assistant, has obviously had some success at Troy, not just as it pertains to the Ole Miss job, but just in general, because let's face it, some SEC jobs are going to open up this year in all probability. Is he a guy that you see as an SEC head coach down the road?
Yeah, I think he'd be a good fit, and I think he'd be a really good candidate for Ole Miss. Talking about coaching up, offensive style, creating mismatches, he would certainly fit that bill. Recruiting, he's a good recruiter. Wouldn't put him kind of in Frank's category there, but, I think he'd be an outstanding fit and has some of the offensive ingenuity that he brought to the job. So, absolutely makes some sense, and would be a real, real good candidate, and someone I'd look really closely at if I were the Ole Miss administration.
Okay, let's switch to the NFL because that's where I told you we were going to go here. I'll stay on an Ole Miss related topic for a minute. The New York Giants. Two things: one, they've been really pleased with Evan Engram so far in camp. Those of us who covered Evan were not surprised. The other thing is that there's been some talk about kind of during camp putting a pitch count on Eli Manning a little bit, making sure that that arm is fresh going into the season. He's not getting any younger. When you evaluate Eli as a quarterback today, strengths, weaknesses, how much does he have left in the tank? And if you're the Giants, is this the right move to kind of start putting him on a pitch count and saying, hey, you know, he's not the quarterback that he was physically 5 years ago?
Well, I think Eli always has been a top-notch competitor, a top-notch preparer. So he's knows where to go with the football. When he has had protection, he's been outstanding. When he's had weapons and enough time to be able to go through his progressions, he's been very good. And this is no secret, and you can throw in other quarterbacks, you know, Phillip Rivers is another one, that when the protection's not good, they start forcing the ball, like any quarterback in a passing league. When you're trying to come from behind, mistakes are made because they're forcing it. They're trying to force things that are not there instead of doing the prudent thing with the football because they need to try to make something happen. I think that continues to be the case with Eli. When you are dealing with what I would call decent to slightly above average physical skills, which Eli had coming into the league, And as he's getting older, you don't get faster, you don't get stronger. In most cases, that would be the case. In with him, to where I still think he is very capable. You get this all the time. Well, he manages things, and well, he won two Super Bowls, but no, there's no but. I mean, they don't win those two Super Bowls without him. Now, was he the guy that just making play after play? No, it was good defense, good offensive line, but no. Big-time throws and big-time moments is something that he's proven he can do at an extremely high level. He can continue to do that and will do that with the weapons they have if the protection holds up. It's still the biggest concern that I have for them offensively. Left tackle is a problem. Eric Flowers is really not an ideal left tackle. They drafted him to be that. So So that is a concern. I think that the best thing to do, and you have to do this, and Ben McAdoo knows, and Eli knows, the best thing to do is to kind of get your body prepared. We're having this problem is we're in the early part of camp. Due to the CBA rules, you can't do a lot in the off season to prepare your body for the physical contact, but there's going to be physical contact. So how do you, you've got to ease into it. So I think pitch count is smart. I think they've got a lot of weapons. I think Evan Engram is going to be a huge factor. And I think they dodged the bullet today with the Sterling Shepard had an ankle injury, and it was there was concern that it was serious. It's a low ankle sprain, but you know he is part of what's going to make this passing game dynamic, and that they'll have three or four weapons. Reduce that by one, and it makes it, particularly this early, it makes it difficult. I think the Giants could be a really surprise team, and let's watch for them in the NFC East to be a real factor.
Yeah, I kind of think they're going to be a factor. I'm telling you, man, I would be the worst coach ever, Chris, because I would be like, yeah, let's put everybody in bubble wrap, and we'll just everybody get on an exercise bike. We'll just roll around for a little while. I'm that coach that would be so scared of losing people in practice.
Yeah, and the reality is, you'd try to do that, but then when you do hit, when you have to, you increase the chances of the guys getting injured, and that's the issue. The best way to prepare your body for physical contact is to have a week of mini camp in March where you work your way into it, and by the end of the week you hit, then you back off. Then you do it again early May, same thing. June, same thing. You know, if you do that, their bodies would be prepared for it. CBA doesn't allow it, doesn't want it, because again, as you mentioned, why do you want to do that in March and April, in May, and you get injured? Well, yeah. Because you're trying to decrease the chances of injuries when you do get into the physical part, which is this time of year. So it's inevitable. And it's also a part of the reason why the early part of the season, while it may be exciting, it's not very good through September. And it really, it's a game in which you try to ease your way into it, and then you quite frankly, got to preserve yourself a little bit. Football is a game, and it's kind of like exercise, if you think about it. You know, if you just go ahead and work out really, really hard, and then you give it up for 6 months, it's you're not progressing. It's about giving your body time to recover and then going back and building up that ability to absorb and build up those, what I call the physical calluses to deal with contact. That is football. You can't avoid it. But, yeah, it is, you know, you can do the bubble wrap thing, but eventually it's going to come down, and we're having a lot of it. I think some of the injuries you just can't control, but some of it is guys are just not ready and prepared for the physical contact, and when they do, it just increases the chances of injuries.
We're taping this on a Wednesday night. It's about 8:20 in the evening Central Time. Of the injuries that have happened so far in camps around the NFL, which ones will have the most impact?
Well, Will Fuller, the receiver in Houston with the Texans, it's a big-time injury for them, hurts them. And then I think the outstanding young rookie guard out of Western Kentucky that San Diego drafted, Forrest Lamp, out for the season with a torn ACL, was going to be a plug-and-play starter with Dan Feeney, the other rookie guard from Indiana. That's a big time blow. Again, for a young guy, for a team that we're counting on him, that's a big time blow for the. It's early, and we're going to have some more, unfortunately. But those are the two that really stand out in the early part of camp.
The season's still a few weeks away. There's time to look at this. Of some of the teams that really struggled last year, Jacksonville, the. What's now the Los Angeles Chargers? It's going to take me a little while to get used to saying Los Angeles and not San Diego. I'm not going to get that down in a month. I got to be honest. Cleveland, Philly, some of those kind of teams that were really bad a year ago. Which of those, if any, stand out as a team that you say that's a candidate to really improve?
I think Philly can be better, and again, it just so much tied to health, but their offensive line really struggle with all sorts of injuries. They can be much improved if they can be healthy. I would say a team like Minnesota can be much better too. Same thing on the offensive line. Jacksonville, listen, it really depends on how the quarterback comes along, because Blake Bortles has certainly hurt them, but they working to improve the physical nature of their running game, and the defense has got some talent, and that's a division that's competitive. I think, you know, you got all three teams that look like they can be a 9-7, 10-6 team. Some are going to fall short. But the Chargers, with Phillip Rivers, always has a shot, but as we kind of alluded to, you know, you start off with an injury like that, that they are really thin, and I think that's something that we need to look out for. You know, I think Miami will be good, but nobody's catching New England in the East. And Baltimore's had that's another team that's really had a very tough opening to their training camp with a number of key injuries. I would say that maybe Philly could maybe be in the race a little bit longer in the East. I don't think they'll win it. You know, I think Tampa will be a little bit better. That's maybe some teams that I think, you know, will kind of maybe surprise. Let's watch the AFC South. Going to be a lot of fun. Tennessee is really getting better. And I'm curious to see what Houston can do and how quickly Deshaun Watson can get on the field, because they've won the division without good quarterback play for years. With good quarterback play, they might be appreciably better, meaning, you know, more than just win the division and get eliminated in the first round of the playoffs. Maybe they can be more of a threat.
Do you think Deshaun Watson can have a Dak Prescott sort of impact in year one?
Well, I think that what happened in Dallas with a great offensive line and a really good running game, I think Dak did a really good job of being able to get himself into the playbook, understand things, and when they needed him to make four or five big plays a game, he did it. But they didn't ask him to put the team on his back, put the offense on his back. Yes, I think Deshaun Watson can do that. I think he has really good physical skills, and I think he's got a lot of those intangible qualities. Maybe not quite Dak-like, you know, but, I mean, he's along those lines. I mean, he's a gym rat, loves the game. So I do think he can have that type of an impact. I think Houston has a little better defense than Dallas, quite a bit better defense, I should say. Not as good of a running game overall, although it's solid. So I think it'll be a little bit different, but, yes, I do think he can have a very good year. I don't know that I would say that he'll have the rookie of the year, you know, like Dak and all that, but I think he'd be pretty good.
We've talked a little bit about the Giants. We've talked a little bit about the Cowboys. We talked about the Eagles a little bit. Give me your thoughts on the NFC East. That's always one of those fascinating divisions. It's got all the traditional rivalries, the Redskins and the Cowboys and the Giants and the Eagles and the Giants and the Cowboys and on and on and on. Dallas had that special season a year ago in the regular season. They blew it in the playoffs. But I've seen some people say, hey, I kind of expect them to regress a little. And then I've seen people say they expect the Giants to regress some. If just kind of your thoughts on that division. If you had to pick a team right now to win it, where would you go?
Well, I think the issue with Dallas is simply, you know, their defense is not good enough. Can they win the division? They did it last year. And depending upon how the Giants, you know, stay healthy, that'll determine whether they can win the division. But I don't see Dallas as a team that can go any further than they did last year. Their falter in the playoff will continue because their lack of defense. I think the Giants have the potential to be a better defense. And if they can protect Eli, they have the better chance of advancing in the playoffs if they do make it. But again, so much of it in a 53-man roster, Neil, is just who can stay healthy. I think Giants, Cowboys, and then I think there's a little drop-off. I think the Eagles can be competitive but fall short. And right now I've got some concerns about the Redskins. I'd probably put them fourth. But I think 10-6 is, you know, to me looks like that's what I see the Cowboys, the Giants, a 10-6 type team. Now, you know, again, it's not a prediction of the record. It's just that's where I see them personnel-wise. And, you know, all of a sudden, if you have all it takes is one team in your division, let's say the Redskins really struggle, well, then all of a sudden that's an extra win or two for the top teams in the division. So 10-6 turns to 12-4 really easily and vice versa. So, but that's kind of how I see the East. kind of panning out. I like the Giants and the Cowboys a little better than I do the Eagles and the Skins.
There's some talk in the NFC North of it's obviously Green Bay's division to win. Detroit feeling better about defense, feeling better about their ability to get to the passer. Just maybe a sense that that team has found its identity a little bit. Is there anyone in that division? You mentioned Minnesota earlier, but is there anyone that's good enough to challenge Green Bay at all?
I think Minnesota can. I think that, you know, Dalvin Cook is off to a great start in camp. Him, you know, put in a lot of pads, so I'm not going to overstate that. But talking with their coaches, they are and doing a lot of work with them prior to the draft. The quote has been, he's better than we thought they were, that he was. So I think they're going to have a chance to be pretty good. And I think because their offensive line was just a mash unit last year, they protect Sam Bradford. That's better quarterback play than I think people realize. They've got a pretty good defense, and I think that they can challenge Green Bay. Green Bay doesn't have enough defense. Much like the Cowboys, I mean, you get into the playoffs and, you know, Aaron Rodgers is likely going to beat you in a shootout, but that's what it is. It's a shootout. It's Aaron Rodgers, and, you know, if he can just outscore you, he can advance, but they're not good enough defensively to be a championship team. So I think that I think Minnesota has a shot, but I would favor Green Bay because of Aaron Rodgers.
Tom Brady's 40. That hard to believe. Tom Brady's 40 years old.
Yeah, I know. It really hits me like a ton of bricks because I remember him
too.
At Michigan, and remember talking with Lloyd about him and Lloyd Carr, and you know, and I remember him look like a ragamuffin coming into the combine, and here he is, he's 40 years old, and married his supermodel, eating avocado ice cream, and wanting to play till he's 45. And I'm thinking this is just really amazing. It's to me, more than any year I can remember, it's the storyline in the NFL is, can anybody beat the Patriots? They, I think, are that much better than everybody else. We know historically how well they're prepared and how well they're coached. We know what Tom Brady is and seemingly continues to be. They're kind of on a different level. They are better roster-wise than they have been in the past several years. It's like they're loading up to make a run to get as many of these down the stretch. And then on the other side of it, they're basically, and this is the right thing to do, you'll never hear them say this, they're preparing as if this is Tom's last year. And then if Tom comes back next year, great, they'll prepare next year as his last year. I mean, that's what you have to do. The whole, you know, I'm going to play down 45 talk is fine. But, you know, it's one day at a time, literally, and it's certainly going to be 1 year at a time. And that just changes once you have an injury. The body doesn't respond quite as well. So it's easy to say, yeah, it could happen for Tom Brady and Drew Brees to play another 4 or 5 more years. But the reality is you just got to take it day by day. But they are loaded for bear, even better than they've been defensively. They've got depth at running back. Their best outside receiver will be Brandon Cooks coming over from the Saints. They've got Brady. They've got a really good. I mean, this is going to be very, very scary if they stay healthy and Brady stays healthy. It's good luck trying to beat them. It's going to be really difficult. I mean, I think they'll lose a game or two. That'll happen. But I see it going through Foxborough, and I don't see anybody touching them.
You sound like you're talking about Alabama football.
It's a storyline. You pretty much pencil Alabama into the national playoffs, and it's just about matchup, and it's pretty much it. But New England, and normally you can say, well, they've got some issues. You know, you never count New England out. They're probably going to be there. And, you know, this year it's definitely Alabama-like. I mean, it is New England and everyone else. And I think the intrigue is going to be who's going to emerge in the NFC, because I think there's more balance. But I just don't see anybody. Listen, you get into the playoffs, one game, anything can happen.
Okay, but let me stop you. If I told you, if the football gods came down, I always love to take a visit from the football gods. So the football gods come down, and they say, hey, Chris, Can't tell you who, but we've looked into our crystal ball and we know this to be a fact. The New England Patriots are not in the Super Bowl. So they say, so Chris, who is it? Who is it?
I think it's the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Oakland Raiders. It's Pittsburgh. I could see this. Pittsburgh's healthy. Le'Veon Bell's healthy and running the football. Big Ben defense is healthy, have good breaks there. They could play with New England and have a shot at beating them. Oakland is capable, particularly if, let's say, New England, and if the football guy doesn't give you all the details, I think what you can see is, you know, possibility of saying, wait a minute, that means there's probably been an injury. So maybe an Oakland or a Pittsburgh ends up getting home field advantage. Well, I could see Oakland with Derek Carr having a shot. So I would say that it's Oakland or Pittsburgh, preferably with a home field, hosting New England and getting them. That's where I would see it happening and them not getting there.
When it's all said and done, and this dynasty ends however it ends, who gets most of the credit, Belichick or Brady? And who deserves it?
Well, you know, here's the reality. They've not won a Super Bowl without the other to this point. I think it's going to be split. Probably people are going to say, you know, the player, the coach. I think that if Belichick stays beyond Brady and wins one, then he'll get, you know, then it'll be more him. And if Belichick doesn't win one without Brady, they'll say, you know, it's Brady. Listen, I'm a big believer in that, you know, you got to have, it's the combination of both. I think that the fact that Brady is so great and he's such a great leader, and he really is an extension of Bill, that, you know, I know that without him, they'll still be very good. But I don't know if they win all those Super Bowls. I don't know if they win one. I really don't. I'm partial to Bill. I've worked with Bill. I think he's good, if not the best coach in NFL history when you consider in the modern era. Remember, he's the GM there too, so he is ahead of the game. Detractors will say, Deflategate and Spygate and all that. The reality is he is just a cut above. I work at this every day. He's just a cut. He's just different. He's, you know, we can talk about guys and they're all the same. A lot of people are the same. Bill is different. He's a cut above other people, but so is Brady. I'd probably go with Belichick to answer it, but that's a very difficult argument there because Brady's just something special.
I want to ask you about Colin Kaepernick in a minute, just your thoughts on that whole thing. But first, if you could give two teams, if the football gods came down and said you can pick two teams that you think represent the NFC in the Super Bowl, who would be the two that you'd go with as sort of your – you could pick two against the pool. Who would the two be?
I'd say that certainly the best roster in the NFC is Atlanta. Atlanta had some breaks last year with good fortune injury-wise, but Matt Ryan played as good as anybody consistently throughout the year at quarterback, and that includes Tom Brady. They've got great weapons at running back, great weapons at receiver. The offensive line has gotten better, and defensively Dan Quinn is starting to put together a defense similar to what they did in Seattle when he was there. So I still think that now you're making the change. Steve Sarkisian's calling plays. Kyle Shanahan's not on offense. Marquand Manuel's the new defensive coordinator. That's not going to be as big of a change because he's going to be running Dan Quinn's defense. The Super Bowl hangover, no team has lost a Super Bowl and gone back and won one since the 72 Dolphins. No team has lost a Super Bowl and gone back to the Super Bowl since the Bills and their run. So there's some challenges there, but I still think they're the most talented team. Seattle can be pretty good. Got to fix some things on the offensive line, but they're a pretty good team. I would put those two in that order, but I don't think they're prohibitive favorites. And I think Atlanta is still the better team in terms of overall personnel. But that's how I would do it. And then, you know, I just don't see, you know, an Aaron Rodgers can take Green Bay only so far unless the defense improves. But I think Arizona's still, you know, struggling a little. I think Seattle is good enough, you know, to get home field advantage in that division. And if they do, I think you can make a strong case for them along with Atlanta. I would both probably say Atlanta and Seattle is, you know, maybe the championship game, and then New England, and then we're just going to have to, you know, really Pittsburgh or Oakland would be the where I think, you know, would be the final four candidates. And I don't know, I'd probably go with Pittsburgh a little bit better than overall roster, but Oakland is right there as well.
See, that's the appeal of the NFL. And I'm an NBA guy. I mean, I love the NBA. I sit around and watch more NBA than I care to admit sometimes. But the problem with the NBA is that there are so many teams in the NBA that go into a season with no chance to make the playoffs.
That's right.
And that's
right.
Of,
and
you know,
it's exactly right. I mean, you're not going to have, there's no chance that the Atlanta Hawks get hot and win the NBA title next.
None,
year.
Zero.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you look at an NBA going in the next season, realistically, it's Golden State, Cleveland, maybe Boston, and that's kind of it. And that's
right.
Where the NFL has them beat, is that there's so many teams, even with a dynasty like New England going, there's so many teams who can realistically go into a season and say, you know, if a break or two happens, we can make the Super Bowl.
Well, I'll give you this. Last year at this time, I would have told you, you know, this Atlanta team's getting better and let's watch them. But it wasn't until about week 10 or 11 where you start to see those four young defensive players off the rookie class start to really have an impact. And then by playoff time, you know, look, I had that feeling. They had the look of, look, they would beat Dallas. They would beat Green Bay. They look better. And, you know, I don't think you could have said that. And so who's to say that the Giants, you know, won't be the team, or that maybe Green Bay with their defense, or, you know, absolutely. It could happen in the NFL more so than it could in certainly the NBA and some other sports. And I think that does make it intriguing. But, again, I'll go back and say it. I think this year is a little bit more, you know, we've got in the New England Patriots, we got our Golden State Warriors. I mean, it is kind of like, can anybody beat them? I think they potentially could be that good, and I'm very curious to see how, I know how they'll handle it, but, you know, injuries are such a huge factor in our game that,
yeah,
that could, you know, equalize it and bring them back to the pack, and all of a sudden we're having a completely different conversation in the first week of November. So.
Yeah, it's the difference in the discussion. If you offer someone the Warriors versus the pool, you have to really consider the Warriors. If you offer the Patriots or the pool in the NFL because of the injury factor, you almost have to take the pool.
Yeah, you might, although I think I might take the Patriots, and,
wow,
you know, because but you're right. That's exactly right. It is just very much, you know, more balanced and evenly spread out, and you don't know what type of team you're going to have in November as opposed to September.
Last couple of things. Colin Kaepernick still searching for an employer. The Ravens have thought about it. It makes some sense there, given some of the situation with Joe Flacco. Is the Ravens ownership overthinking this, or is Kaepernick simply not good enough given the distractions that he brings from a media standpoint and such when he arrives?
Well, let's take it from a couple of angles. From a football standpoint, what is his value as a football player? I think that he has some value. I think he runs an offense that is a little more unconventional. Not a guy that's going to kill you from the pocket, but he's got ability with boots and waggles to do a lot of things. I think the best offenses in the league where he would be a fit would be like Carolina and Seattle. And why I say that to start is, if you're talking about him, and we'll get to Baltimore in a second, but if you're talking about him as a backup, that's a different story, and here's what people don't understand. Well, he's a better backup than some of these jokers that I saw this team sign. Yes. physically he is. But if you sign him as a backup, you don't have enough time and enough reps in practice to work one offense, much less two. So how are you going to get an alternative offense for Colin established? Because in this league, the starter gets 90% of the reps. So how are you going to get, you know, it's not just about him doing it. Your protections change, your route concepts change. So if he's a backup quarterback, he has to be a backup where he can run a similar offense that the starter's running. Well, that limits it to, as I said, a couple of teams. So the best fit, I said all along, was wait until somebody has an injury. Now, I was thinking more deeper into training camp, but as we said, the injuries are happening and Joe Flacco is out. Now it makes more sense from a football standpoint to say, he's a guy, he's been successful, he's won, we'll modify our offense, and we can do that because he's going to get, you know, he's going to get starter reps, and it can work from a football standpoint. Now, how long would Joe Flacco be out? Do you want him there? All those things, but it makes some sense from a football standpoint. I do know this, and before it ever started to come out, Steve Bisciotti is a type of owner that will have no problem signing a guy like Colin Kaepernick. However, and I said that publicly, national radio and in my forums, but he has apparently gotten some brushback from sponsors, fans, and I think he is, maybe he's overthinking it, maybe he's just thinking it. But I think I said that there was definitely some political issues here, but I'm here to tell you that there's a lot more of that political part of this than I ever thought. Because from a football standpoint, which is the way I view things, I thought there were some limitations to the fit of Colin, and hopefully I explained that well enough. But now, yeah, the political part of it, I think, is a big issue. And I don't know how this is going to play out. You know that John Harbaugh got the big-time stamp of approval from his brother Jim about, hey, this is going to be a good fit for you and all that. So I'm very curious to see, and I think if he doesn't sign with Baltimore, it will be because of some of this off-the-field stuff and maybe some of the – I think the owner is looking at it saying, well, wait a minute, I'm going to do this. I may lose sponsors. I may lose favor with my fans. And then, you know, it's going to happen for 4 or 5 weeks, and then Flacco comes back. And do I want to do all this and go through all this? And, you know, it's not like he's gone for the year, Flacco. So I think that's what they're trying to work through.
All right, last thing, Chris, and you're, as always, awesome. It's a lot of fun to talk. One of my favorite players at the college level, I just loved watching him play, was Jamal Adams at LSU, and he's getting set for his rookie year with the Jets. He made some headlines earlier this week, probably didn't mean to the way that – that he did. He said some things about head injuries, CTE, that kind of thing. Talking about how if you're gonna die, there's somewhat taken out of context. There's no place better than to die on the field. It's not exactly what he meant. I know that it wasn't given the news that's been around the NFL and around the game of football over the last few years. Probably not the best look in the world. Let me ask you this. You're a guy that loves the game. You've been around the game. You're a believer in the game. The CTE stuff, the New York Times story from last week, when you look at the future of professional football, the future of football in general, what can the NFL do to sort of change the narrative that's developing a little bit about the danger of the game, the activity in the participation in football at the youth level is down. It's up in other sports, baseball, soccer. It's down in football. Is there anything football can do about it?
They're trying, and USA Football is the direction that they've gone. They put some money into, and I've had a little bit of involvement with it, by the way, and I think they're doing a good job, doing all they can do, try to educate youth coaches. I believe that, first of all, you're correct. Youth football is down 24% a year for the past several years. So what does that really mean? The popularity of the NFL and major college football has never been better. I believe, and you correct me if I'm wrong, if you think I'm wrong, but I think NFL and college football are one and two in terms of popularity in this country.
Yeah, it's probably true. Yeah, I mean, the NBA is up there, MLB at times, but in terms of the overall full season sport, yeah, I agree.
So I think it's popular from a fan standpoint and only growing. From a participation standpoint, where we're going to be, I don't know, 10, 20 years from now. If you continue to reduce the participation by 24, 25% a year, down the road there's going to be less pool to choose from. Now, everything's relative. If the pool is less and maybe the overall quality of play on the field is not as good, but it's still competitive and the excitement, it may not challenge the popularity of the sport, but the quality of the pure production of the talent could be affected. You just think about that. Now, how do you deal with it? First of all, I'm a believer that youth football is the worst coach sport in the country. We had a lot of these, you know, Vince Lombardi wannabes, just go out there and hit them, and, you know, and well, all of a sudden, you know, the average age in which a kid quits football is 12 years old.
Yeah.
They shouldn't even be playing tackle football at 12 years old, much less that's the age where they quit. How soon are they starting, for goodness sakes? Well, I think what needs to be done is the sport of football needs to be taught. If you want to do it at a youth level at 8, 9, 10 years old, do it in a non-contact.
Play flag.
You know, and teach the skills with flags.
Yeah.
Teach throwing. Teach running. Teach catching. You know,
footwork.
Teach positioning. And all those things need to be taught. I didn't play football until junior high. There wasn't youth football when I grew up. I mean, I grew up in a small town in South Louisiana, so we didn't have it. But
yeah.
I think the fact that they have it, people assume that's good. It's not good if it's not caught correctly. Now,
I grew up in the football capital of the world, Ruston, Louisiana. I mean, it is established as the greatest football town in America. I read that somewhere. And we didn't play tackle until junior high.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's great if you're going to teach it at a young age, but let's not take a kid whose bones have not developed, and quite frankly, you know, they get hit and they get scared because another kid in this class, and we've all been there, that's just his growth spurt hits him in second grade and the other one not to fourth grade, and that's just not – teach the skills, and then I think the physical part gets a little bit later. Let some things develop. There's no doubt we're not going back. I mean, the reality is there were more issues back when President Truman wanted to stop football and actually save football because there were so many deaths and that's when the modern day football of rugby started to develop into more of the passing game and then we went into where we saved football years and years ago. I think as we go forward, you know, back in those days, they didn't study the brains of you know, ex-players. Now we're in an era where we're starting to study the brains of players, and we're starting to realize how much it's having an effect. And when you start to see guys like Tony Dorsett, Jim McMahon, guys that we know, you know, Junior Seau, all guys that, you know, maybe in our generation saw and knew, and they're already affected by this, we're learning more because they're donating their brains more. So it's going to be greater awareness. Well, parents, particularly mothers, don't want their kids playing football. So we need to teach it from a skill standpoint, not a physical standpoint early, and do the physical part with pads later. That's what you can do. And the league, I think, is putting money into it. Let's call it like it is. The league is putting money into safety with all the rules, mainly. Certainly they're for safety. But they're for safety for monetary reasons because they're getting sued in court, and they want to do everything they can when they get into court to say, look at all the rule changes we've made within the league and what we're trying to do to make it safe. You can't legislate the physical nature out of football. You're never going to eliminate injuries, but I think there are things you can do, and they're trying to do it. The game has changed. People say, it's not as good. Listen, I remember when Mel Blunt would take a receiver and drive him into row C in the stands. You know, we adjusted to that. you know, it's an offensive game. It's tough to play defense. And I think if you start to teach tackling, listen, I think Pete Carroll in Seattle has done a really good job of teaching some of the rugby tackling, where your tackling has gotten worse in the league, but I think there's some that are doing it well. And I think you can do it with your head to the side. I think we can do that. We can adjust it. But it's going to take almost a generation of high school coaches, college coaches, to be able to teach it at a different level. And what we're seeing now is kids that are growing up as headhunters, and now they're asked to be to back off. And it's just, we're in that stage, in that kind of that gray area where, you know, you just, you know, it's going to take another generation, Neil, to kind of say, well, this is how you tackle, this is how you play, this is how you teach it. And I think if that continues to go in the direction and make it safer, I think the sport will be around. It'll probably be after my lifetime, but there's potential that 25 years from now, that if it doesn't get better, that the sport could be negatively affected. But there are a lot of things that are done. I mean, you know, youth soccer with girls, or there's more concussion. Well, first of all, girls don't play football for the most part. You know, ton of people play soccer, and you know, the part of the brain that affects cognitive thinking in a woman or a girl is in the front, and all those headers and all that's having an effect now. So I think as we learn more, we're probably going to have to make a lot of adjustments in a lot of sports to make the game safer for everybody to learn and grow and develop as the years go along.
Well, Chris, as you know, you and I go way back. You're one of the absolute best football minds I've ever talked to. As always, it's a lot of fun. I threw college at you. I threw pro at you. I threw the future of the game at you. You handled it all with aplomb. Better than I would have done, that's for sure.
Oh, I don't know about that. But, yeah, it's always great to catch up with you, and look forward to doing it again more in the future. And it's a fun time of year with football starting, and it's going to be a fun year in both the college and the pro level, and it's always exciting to anticipate the oncoming of a season where hope springs eternal for everyone, right?
Yeah, everyone. Even ULM. I think ULM has a chance.
There
to
win you
the,
go.
They have they're undefeated. If That's the right. season
Absolutely.
Ended today, ULM would be in the playoff picture.
And absolutely, that is correct. And, you know, we'll see if that's the case after they go to Memphis on the 31st and then Florida State. But, you know, right now, you are correct, sir.
Probably not. But, hey, we'll worry about that when the time comes. Listen, thanks for the time. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you, Neil.
All right, bye, Chris. Our thanks to Chris Landry for joining us on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. We'll be back tomorrow with another Beer Garden. John Hamm of the franchise in Oklahoma City will come on. We'll talk NBA offseason. It's August. Normally the biggest story in the NBA in August is the release of the schedule. This year there's some big stuff going on. Carmelo Anthony still out there as a potential Houston Rocket. Maybe even Oklahoma City. Maybe he goes west to Los Angeles. There's just a lot of rumors. Portland. A lot of rumors involving Melo, LeBron James back in the news, Kyrie Irving in the news. So we'll touch on all of those things, talk about who won the NBA offseason, who's positioned themselves to maybe contend with the Warriors in 2017-18. But we'll talk to John later today. I'll tape that on Thursday. We'll get it to you on Friday for another Beer Garden. So until then, again, our thanks to Chris Landry, and our thanks to you for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.